I'm here to introduce your speakers and make sure we get through the process and finish up 55 minutes from now. During the presentation, I would like you to think about questions for our speakers. And after their presentations, we'll have an opportunity to raise all kinds of questions with them that would help clarify their successful careers in scientific research. Rather than individually introducing the speakers, I'm going to introduce all three at the same time. Our first speaker is Marvin Jensen. Our second speaker will be Stuart Nelson. And our third speaker is Attar Matu. They all have a number of characteristics in common. They've been recognized by their peers for their excellence in scientific research. They're nationally and internationally recognized. Two of the speakers have been elected to the ARS Hall of Fame, one in 2000 and the other in 2002. Attar Matu is still early in his career and is still an aspiring Hall of Fame electee. Two of our speakers are engineers, and Dr. Matu is a biologist. The first speaker, Dr. Marvin Jensen, found opportunities in solving problems in water use and irrigation. And he did this, or started doing that, while I was still a sophomore in high school. And I've been with the agency a rather long time myself. Dr. Stuart Nelson, website information says he's an ag engineer, and I know that as a fact. He's worked for a long period of time measuring various properties in agricultural and food products. I think if the federal process had the opportunity to really classify him correctly, he's probably more of an electrical engineer, because he's applied radio waves to solving those problems of measurement and power transmission and use in agricultural problems. Dr. Matu's area of work is, and actually he's the research leader at a laboratory at Beltsville on vegetable research. He's really a molecular biologist, and one of the things he's recognized for is increasing a compound in tomatoes, and he'll probably tell you about that later, that has attributes relative to what some call functional foods and that sort of thing, and is believed to help reduce cancer. And, you'll hear more about that. So that is a way of introduction. I'm going to turn it over to the panel. Dr. Jensen will start. I've given them the latitude to speak a little longer than 10 minutes because some feel they need a little bit more than that. But once they hit 13, I'll stand up and that'll be the cue that it's all over.
Thank you, Lou. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate being here. I thought for a while ARS had forgotten all about me since I retired a number of years ago, so I thoroughly enjoy getting back and seeing old friends and a number of people that I worked with here in the audience. I'd like to keep my, hopefully, 10 minutes to three parts. First part is, who am I? Second part is critical elements within ARS that influenced the work that I did, and the critical elements outside of ARS that influenced my research, my activities. So who am I? Well, I'm a shy farm boy from Minnesota. I'm a member of a very large family. None of my older brothers and sisters that a lot of you, I think, had. So in a way, I was kind of lucky, I suppose. I enlisted in the Navy when I was 17, spent a couple of years in the Navy in the U.S. and South Pacific. When I was discharged from the Navy, since my father immigrated from Norway, he asked me to stay home at least for one season and take care of the family farm while he spent several months back in Norway seeing his brothers and sisters. During that time, you know, I'm a high school dropout, by the way, but during that time I completed my GED tests so that I could get into North Dakota State University, where I obtained a BS and MS degree. And later on I realized that I didn't have enough training, and I was fortunate enough to be able to go back to college, kindly with the help of ARS and public law, I think it was 560 if I'm not mistaken, take coursework and work on a PhD at Colorado State University. Okay, now within ARS, I'd just like to highlight a few points of things that influenced my research. Actually, I had worked for a few months as part of the earlier organization, the Bureau of Plant Industry, Soils and Ag Engineering, a joint assignment with South Dakota State Ag Experiment Station and BPEI. And then I went back to North Dakota State University, and I was trying to teach full-time and trying to do some research dealing with water management, which required being out in the field in the spring before classes were out and being out in the field in the fall after classes began. So when I had an opportunity, an offer from ARS to conduct research at Bushland, Texas, I sort of jumped at the chance, although I had a hard time convincing my wife that we should move to Texas. She'd never been there. I had fortunately had an opportunity to go down and visit. So that was the first thing within ARS that really influenced my activities. While there, I would have to say that support for research from ARS and personnel was really very important. I'd been there only a short period of time in planning a major or several major experiments dealing with managing soil, water, and plant nutrition for the production of grain sorghum and winter wheat, particularly because that area was just beginning to expand irrigation, and also looking at the productivity of water. But I had the opportunity then to have some renowned scientists within ARS, Dr. Veets and Dr. Hayes, come down for a planning session, but equally important, the director of the Texas Ag Experiment Station was there for all day for a planning session, and for a young guy, I really appreciated that. Dr. Lewis was very good in that respect. Ron Lacewell may or may not know Lewis. So that's a second element, I think, that I need to point out. Another thing that, by coincidence, perhaps, or chance, I was lucky enough to get involved in some foreign travel in 1960, long before some of your activities. And the thing that stands out in my mind there was in the Netherlands, in talking with some researchers, they said, you guys in the U.S. just don't put enough information in your papers so we can do an independent analysis of the work. Well, that really hit home with me, because when I wrote papers after that, I would always think about that and tried to, when space allowed, to include enough background information to allow someone else to do an analysis. So, in a way, I think that was, for me, it was very important. The next thing within ARS that influenced the work that I did was the opportunity to go back to school full-time for 9 months in 1960-61 when I was in Fort Collins. This, I think, was very important. I knew that I needed to have more formal training. I could see that I didn't have adequate formal training. And then following that nine-month period, they allowed me to adjust my work schedule so I could complete a few courses that I needed. There were a couple of other, and then next, there was an opportunity to change tracks. We had an reorganization in 1961, which wasn't as major as some of the others. But during that reorganization, ARS basically allowed me to step back and say, no, that's not the track that I want to go down. It was leading towards administration. And it was an opportunity for me to say, whoa, I don't want to go that way. I want to go this way. And to me, that was very important. And not only allowed me to do that, but to remain temporarily at Fort Collins, Colorado, where I had access to library facilities, instead of moving to the office I was supposed to work out of in the city of Boise, Idaho, waiting for the lab at Kimberly to be completed. There was another reorganization that probably was equally important that came some time later. That was 1972. And that was a major reorganization, and I had an opportunity to become involved in administrative channels, and I declined, and I don't regret that one bit. And I was successful again in allowing, getting ARS to allow me to continue dealing more strictly with research. Another item that was important to us in the field was that Bill Rainey would provide copies of some classic publications that quite often weren't available even in libraries, but certainly at field locations, these publications weren't available. And there were some very, very good publications that I got access through the compliments of Bill Rainey, sometimes securing an original copy and having copies made and distributed to field locations. Okay, now, more important part, when I, at Fort Collins, after that coursework, there was a sort of a chance assignment that probably had more to do with what I did years later. About 1961, the Soil Conservation Service, now the Natural Resources Service, asked Howard Hayes and Harry Blaney to provide, develop monthly coefficients for use with the Blaney-Criddle equation. The engineers know the Blaney-Criddle equation. Harry Blaney went to Israel for a year. Howard Hayes went to Davis, California for a six-month sabbatic and gave me the stack of material that they had collected. So as I started looking at that, I could see that there just has to be a better way of estimating crop water needs, consumption of water, than the Blaney-Criddle method. So that's how I kind of got started in trying to develop a better concept, the concept of reference evapotranspiration and crop coefficients, which we sort of developed in the 60s and which is now internationally used worldwide and in the U.S. So that sort of set the stage. Following that, we knew at Kimberly, Idaho, we needed to have supporting information to go with any new concept, and that's when we put in the lysimeter, and Dr. Wright particularly ran that for a number of years. So continued support, I think, was very important, and ARS did provide continuous support for me, but also while I was on the national program staff, I think ARS policy was that we would provide continuous support for people working in the field if we thought what they were doing was going to eventually produce useful results. Participation in conferences, I think, was very important because this, for me, sitting in a conference is where I would get ideas and also to learn what was going on in science and engineering, but also to learn what the level of technology was. Transfers around ARS, you may not look at that as not good, but I would say that I'd have to admit that having experience in Texas and Idaho and then working with people throughout the U.S. gives, when you're dealing with soil and water resources, this really gives you a good perspective. Okay, outside of ARS, what influenced me? I think the key thing there was the GI Bill. Without the GI Bill, I probably wouldn't be here today. It allowed me to attend college because my family would not have been able to afford me to go on to school. Another thing I think at this point, a little bit unusual perhaps for me as an engineer, to be taking coursework in botany and plant physiology. That may sound odd to you, but to me it was very important, and it became more important later on because I could communicate with the soils people, I could communicate with the plant people, and it really was important to have, you might say, a multidisciplinary background. And attending, another important aspect for me was the feedback from the practicing engineers. I I was able to visualize what they would accept, because you can't give them a real technical equation, for example, and expect them to use it. You have to understand what they are willing to accept, and then this was very important. So I tried to do that. International experience, that's very helpful. I was cooperating scientists in projects in Pakistan, Egypt, I believe a little bit in Israel. And later on, because of my work with the International Commission on Irrigation and Drainage, with many working with many countries, and eventually I became president or elected president of the International Commission in 1984 to 87. So that was important. Now, what am I doing today? I'd like to quit work. I'm still doing some research in the area of evaporation from water bodies, rivers, reservoirs, and I'm particularly interested in combining remote sensing satellite information with surface modeling and for use in our water issues. I was involved in several lawsuits, one which lasted 14 years, and I was involved in the Colorado River issue that some of you in California remember was settled with signing of the quantitative settlement agreement last October, a historic agreement which should last for 75 years. So that's what I've been doing.
Thank you, Myra. Dr. Nelson now.
Thank you, Lou. I, too, was a farm boy, grew up on a diversified farm in northeastern Nebraska. My federal service began with a two-year enlistment in the U.S. Navy in 1946. This service included the Navy Electronics School and service as an electronics technician aboard a destroyer in the Pacific, maintaining and repairing all shipboard electronics equipment. Then I returned to college, also on the GI Bill, and completed my B.S. and M.S. in Agricultural Engineering and an M.A. in Physics at the University of Nebraska. I completed my Ph.D. in Engineering at Iowa State University several years later after joining ARS at Lincoln, Nebraska in 1954, just 50 years ago. I was recruited for ARS by Dr. Truman Hinton, who was chief of the Farm Electrification Research Branch in the Agricultural Engineering Research Division at Beltsville, Maryland, to lead a relatively new project at Lincoln, Nebraska, exploring the potential for high-frequency dielectric heating applications in agriculture. I began as a federally controlled cooperative agent with ARS, furnishing 60% of my salary, and the Nebraska Agricultural Experiment Station at the University of Nebraska contributing the other 40%. Dr. Hinton was my supervisor and mentor, providing guidance by long distance from Beltsville with a personal visit to Lincoln about once a year. The University of Nebraska provided office and laboratory space, and I was accepted as a faculty member in the Agricultural Engineering Department. Operations were a lot different from what we know today. Communication was mainly by mail. The telephone was used only in matters of some urgency. I was my own secretary, timekeeper, accountant, and business manager. My budget that first year was $3,900, but I could use it in any way that I chose in getting the research accomplished. I could buy supplies, hire students through the university or on LA appointments, travel as necessary. And I prepared a monthly activity report on the research progress to Dr. Hinton and prepared a detailed annual report from which I extracted material for manuscripts for publication. Cooperative arrangements had already been made and been worked out for joint research with the AMS, that's Agricultural Marketing Service, Stored Grain Insects Laboratory at Manhattan, Kansas, which later became part of ARS. We worked closely for several years exploring the potential use of radio frequency, RF, dielectric heating for stored grain insect control, and published those studies in engineering and entomological journals. I had some difficulty getting insect physiologists at the Nebraska Agricultural Experiment Station interested in studying the effects of rapid dielectric heating by high-frequency electric fields on insects. So I borrowed a professional 16-millimeter movie camera from the University of Nebraska Photographic Productions Department and filmed the responses of insects such as weevils, cadell larvae, and roaches as they were exposed to and killed by the high-frequency electric fields in a few seconds. These rather gruesome films captured the interest of the entomologists, and we had several MS and PhD theses done over the next several years, which provided new insights into the lethal action of the high-frequency electric fields on insects. During my second year with ARS, I visited Beltsville, and Dr. Hynten arranged for me to meet with other engineers and scientists working on somewhat related studies. He encouraged me to visit Beltsville in subsequent years, where I met people in the crops research and entomology research divisions. As a result of these meetings, cooperative projects came about in several areas. I see this as one of the great advantages of working at research in ARS. Even before the 1972 reorganization, I established fruitful working relationships with many ARS and state scientists and engineers. Since I was doing research on radiofrequency dielectric heating for seed treatment to improve germination, the necessary cooperative assistance was often developed easily because a lot of people had troubles with seed germination. Through informal cooperation with many state, federal, and private industry laboratories, we studied the responses of seeds of more than 80 different plant species. After we had published some of these studies on hard seed reduction in alfalfa, Dr. Leslie Ballard, a respected seed physiologist with CSIRO in Australia, came to visit me while he was in the U.S. for an international conference. We developed a series of cooperative experiments that answered basic questions for which we had been seeking answers for several years. On an earlier visit to Beltsville, I visited with Dr. Harry Borthwick, who, along with other noted ARS scientists, Sterling Hendricks and Carl Norris, discovered the phytochrome pigment in plants that is associated with the photoperiodic responses. I mentioned to Dr. Borthwick that I had been looking for someone to help in determining how the dielectric heating treatments were affecting the impermeable seed coats of hard seeds in alfalfa to render them permeable. I will always remember his response, "Why not do it yourself?" I was fortunate that Dr. Ballard came along before I had time to do it myself. However, we did a lot of other things ourselves. When we needed a seed germinator and could not afford a commercial one, Wayne W. Wolf, who was my first graduate student at the University of Nebraska, and I developed and built our own versatile seed germinator. Wayne and several other graduate and undergraduate students became seed analysts as we ran thousands of our own germination tests. Following the guidelines and advice that I obtained from another ARS scientist at Beltsville, Orrin Justice, who edited the USDA handbook on testing agricultural and vegetable seeds. Over the past 50 years, we have developed many measurement systems ourselves for determining the dielectric properties of materials over frequency ranges from audio frequencies through microwaves. This was necessary because commercial instruments for that purpose were not available for most of this time period. In the 1970s, when we needed a computer program to calculate complex dielectric properties data from microwave measurements on grain and other samples, nothing was available. I had contacted those labs where most of these kinds of measurements were being developed, the Laboratory for Insulation Research at MIT, the National Bureau of Standards, and the Engineering Experiment Station at the Georgia Institute of Technology. We were fortunate and obtained a program from Georgia Tech that worked only for good dielectrics, not for high-loss materials like grain and other biological tissue. For such high-loss materials, solutions of complex hyperbolic functions were needed. Over the next couple of years, with the help of Laverne Stetson, who had been my graduate student, and Carl Schlaupoff, another graduate student, we developed a very general computer program for precise calculation of the dielectric properties of either high-loss or low-loss materials. We documented it well and eventually furnished copies to more than 40 laboratories around the world where it was helpful in microwave research. On my first foreign trip to conferences in Europe in 1973, I visited the Atomic Weapons Research Establishment at Aldermaston, England, where our program was used extensively in the study of ceramic materials for radome applications. These are those spherically shaped enclosures that protect radar antennas from the elements. On the same trip, I met Andrei Kraszewski, a world-class microwave engineer who was also using our program at the Polish Academy of Sciences in Warsaw. and who joined us as a visiting scientist 14 years later. After four more years, we obtained a permanent appointment for Andre, and he finished his research career with us as an ARS scientist in 2001. During the 1960s and 70s, I very much appreciated the camaraderie within the Agricultural Engineering Research Division, which was nurtured by directors Eugene McKibben and Walter Carlton and the branch chiefs within their division. The discipline-oriented organization provided that advantage because we had frequent opportunities to meet at the annual and winter meetings of the American Society of Agricultural Engineers. Early in this period, my branch chief, Dr. Hynten, asked me to serve as a research leader, providing technical supervision for the electromagnetic radiation research investigations within the farm electrification research branch. Therefore, I had the opportunity to become better acquainted with the National Research Program, which involved research at 20 locations within the U.S. and the Virgin Islands. Several research leaders' meetings were held for the Ag Engineering Research Division, AERD, at Beltsville, Maryland, and Front Royal, Virginia. The research personnel evaluation system that we still use in ARS had its origin in the AERD under the direction of Glenn Vandenberg, who was the Associate Division Director, and we had a part in this in its early evolution. My transfer from Lincoln, Nebraska to the Russell Research Center in Athens, Georgia in 1976 was precipitated by the reorganization in 1972. I arrived in Athens along with two moving vans loaded with lab equipment and was welcomed into the Horticultural Crops Research Laboratory by Gerald Dull, where I continued my research on dielectric properties by incorporating some fruits and vegetables into the agricultural products mix. Our specialized measurements capability attracted the attention of the Department of Energy and the Bureau of Mines, for which we did some new measurements on coal and minerals, thus obtaining funds for additional equipment. Cooperative work was also initiated with the Federal Grain Inspection Service, whose grain moisture meters had been improved with our data on the dielectric properties of grain. Since 1982, I have worked in the Quality Assessment Research Unit led by Woody Barton at the Russell Research Center. In the late 1980s, with the support of Area Director Ernie Corley and International Programs Coordinator David Kincaid, we arranged for the first visiting scientist to work with ARS through the Foreign Ag Service Office of International Cooperation and Development. This scientist was a microwave engineer from mainland China. This arrangement with FAS was so helpful and convenient that we used it for foreign visitors from Canada, Korea, Poland, France, and Egypt since then, and many other ARS scientists have found it helpful as well. As I look back on my 50-year career with ARS, there are several important advantages that I believe contributed to what success I have experienced in my research. The assistance of many able undergraduate and graduate students, visiting scientists, and junior engineers was very important. Four of these joined ARS and continued working with me. Three of them, Wayne W. Wolf, Laverne Stetson, and Kurt Lawrence, who many of you know or will remember, went on to lead their own research projects with ARS in other subject matter areas. The cooperation with other ARS, university, and private company engineers and scientists was most helpful. Linkages with the University of Nebraska and the University of Georgia through cooperative agreements and appointments to the faculty and the graduate schools were also most beneficial. I appreciate very much the guidance and support given me by my supervisors who permitted me to pursue my personal research interests with very little interference. Activity in scientific and professional societies and the inspiration and the interaction enabled by attendance at foreign and international conferences and symposia were also important elements in my research career. And finally, one of the most important advantages was the continuing appropriated funding, though always of modest proportions, that permitted me to maintain the continuity in the research that I pursued.
Good morning. First, I want to, at the outset, say I feel honored and privileged to stand before this special gathering. Also, that ARS is celebrating 50 years, and I think it's as much a tribute to the administrative leadership as to the scientists. I have always, since I enjoyed joined ARS, enjoyed working there, and I believe in the federal domain is one of the fairest agencies. However, my experiences are limited to being at the Beltsville Agriculture Research Center and perhaps represent only a small corner even in Beltsville. My story is a little different from my predecessors in that I was born in Kashmir in India, and I obtained my master's degree in biochemistry and PhD in microbiology from the University of Baroda in India. And I used to teach there, and then I went for a postdoc stint at the University of Adelaide in Australia before I came here. Actually, I came to Beltsville because the external examiner of my PhD thesis was Morris Lieberman. And when he sent his report to my university, he asked that I join him for a postdoc. But I couldn't, and I actually, when I went to Australia, then he asked me to come again, so I, from Australia, came to Beltsville for 1 year and went back to India, and eventually I ended up at Vice Minister of Science in Israel, from where I wrote a Bard grant with Morris Lieberman and came to ARS in 1980, end of 1980. At that time, in the first trip as a visiting scientist and then later on in 1980 as a research associate, there was something special there, and I still look back and I said that was very important. As you heard before, there used to be pioneering research labs. They were built around excellent scientists at that time. And that spirit and the sense that had generated the scientific environment during the running of the pioneering research labs, and one of the labs was headed by Morris Lieberman, I think these were something important, because the camaraderie, as you heard before, was something superb. And they were functioning at high class level. And there were scientists like Sterling Hendricks, Russell Steer, Mike Foss, Merle Christensen, Carl Norris, Morris Lieberman, and others. These accomplished scientists at that time, I saw, were still active at the bench. This was important, that they were working alongside with their scientists as well as technicians on the lab, in the lab. I was lucky to work in the lab of Morris Lieberman and still interact with those others with whom we used to meet. We used to have a coffee break at 10 o'clock and at 3 o'clock. And there were three labs in that building, and everybody would just talk science, what had happened since those few hours we were not together. Things that stood out were openness, readily available encyclopedic knowledge from these mentors, and teamwork. It came naturally to work with others. And whoever had the expertise, it was something interesting. You had a problem, you discussed during the tea break, and someone like Carl Norris would say, well, come down to my lab, I will develop this equipment for you. And in a day it was ready. There's no question of teamship. It came naturally at that time. Also, I had the privilege at that time to collaborate with Judy St. John. She was a plant physiologist working lipids. Bill Wergen, he was an electron microscopist. And Jim Anderson, who was another plant physiologist, biochemist. It was like a teamwork. Everybody worked on a project, and if something developed that was of interest to the other scientists, we worked together. During those years, late 70s, early 1980s, I think we experienced more freedom and flexibility. I think the laboratories enjoyed a lot more independence, and the administration was more in tune and supportive of the productive scientists and lab chiefs. I give you a few examples. We had discovered a rapidly turning membrane protein, the chloroplast, was that it was actually a photosystem II protein and also target of diuron tyrosine herbicides. Charlie Arnson's group had also at the same time found that it bound atrazine. It was one of the few proteins known at that time that bound a herbicide. This was 1980-81. The research leader at that time, Dr. Jim Anderson, thought it best to develop a CRIS on this protein. The Beltsville area, as well as the NPS, readily agreed. And ARS has the distinction on being the agency in which many new discoveries in this field were subsequently made in my lab. we actually used some of this basic research to develop a biosensor that was recently patented, and this biosensor uses the biomedium in terms of thylakoid photosystem II as a sensor, and we created an ultra-sensitive detection tool for herbicides. Second, recombinant DNA technology was just getting to be a routine. I discussed with Dr. Anderson the need to get into this area and suggested to him that I would go to NIH in Bethesda to pick up this technology and build infrastructure in the then plant hormone lab to do molecular work. No more questions were asked. And in a year and a half, we had one of the first cDNA libraries of wound-induced tomato genes at hand. Actually, that was 1984, and that developing, getting into molecular biology at that time, led to what we have now, the cancer-fighting high lycopene tomatoes that we developed by genetic engineering. Another thing that contributed to the excellent scientific environment was the fact that we used to have regular brown bag seminars at the lunchtime to learn what was going on in other labs. On several occasions, this helped scientists to work together and teams got created. Communicating and discussing with colleagues and postdocs in an informal setting generally leads to cooperation and collaboration. I recall this happened after 5 p.m. off campus, over a beer or a soft drink in a bar. I recall many seminar speakers got involved in these social gatherings. Actually, a major discovery that we made of a phosphorylation of this rapidly turning over PS2 protein occurred because the postdoc spent a lot of time in the bar and forgot about his gel. And at 2 in the morning, he calls me, he says, "What should I do? This gel has overrun. I say, "Just take it, dry it, and develop it." And we had just created a new variant of this D1, which was actually later we found to be phosphorylated D1 protein. This would not have happened otherwise. Publications came regularly and in a very serious manner. We all were competitive. Nobody told us to be competitive or publish, really. There was no force, nothing. Commitment, mentoring, and motivation, I believe, are the basic foundations of being an excellent researcher. And these were set by example by our leaders. They were not taught or we did not have training. Actually, in 1988, when I was asked to head the then plant molecular biology lab, I really did not want to be a research leader. I liked the bench work so much. Later on, when Phyllis Johnson took over as the Beltsville area directorship, she had seen my CV, and there was no training, formal training on my qualifications, and she asked that I take the training. After that, I said, "Well, you know, we always saw to the mentors that were there and followed the good advice they gave us." Also, I think the postdoc culture that had not existed before, and that was created by Edenster and others to have additional scientists in the making to come and join these labs, I think that contributed a lot to the science that happened in our lab. I was highly competitive in those areas, in those years, to get those postdoc fellowships, and also to write, in addition to the in-house funding, we were regularly competitive getting extramural funding every few years, and I still continue to write grants, because if you want to expand, that's the only way you can do. I just want to give a thought for you to think about, and also for NPS. We have gone from basic physiology, biochemistry, microbiology, and basic science to applied sciences. And at the same time, we are arrived in an era that is heralded by functional genomics, proteomics, information technology. We are actually entering an era of systems biology, not only because of the computation, but also because functional genomics is telling us that there's a lot of networking in the plants and its environment. There are many common features across commodities that drive biology. In other words, this is a biology or science without borders. So if there's a science without borders and we're getting into newer future science, how does this fit into Chris accountability? Biology is beyond commodities and beyond narrow projects. We need to revisit the Chris accountability vis-a-vis the current and future era of functional genomics and systems biology. Thank you.